live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, everybody. Today is July 17th. And wow, am I excited about a wonderful show. I'm staring at Andrew behind the glass, running the show, running the audio. Today he's going to do a wonderful job, and maybe he won't inject commercials in the middle of the show. You know, maybe he won't play our show in the middle of commercials. I'm excited. My name's Alon. Next to me is my esteemed co-host, Ara.
Yo.
Ara, the game designer. And I'm just Alon, the game talker.
Well, you're the host of the show.
Can we make a title of mine using the word spiel?
The Spielmaster?
That's not bad. The Spielmaster next to Ara, the game designer. All right, so we've got a couple topics today, but some other things I want to talk about as well. We were trying to develop this bit before the show started. You see, I talk about on this show every once in a while how I listen to Adam Carolla on the way to work in the morning, and so I steal a lot of his material because when it comes to radio bits, I am not creative in any way, shape, or form.
Which, by the way, Adam's awesome on the radio, not so much on TV.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, you might all remember. What was that called? What did we used to do, Andrew? No, but what was... Doubles Ask Us Rodeo, but with games, right? And so we were trying to develop... This week I heard him do something very simple, which I've heard before. I just never thought we could apply it to the video game radio show.
Yeah, it's going to be touchy.
But he did... You know, you come up with a movie title. Someone calls in with a movie title, and he tells you the plot line. And he's very good at this stuff. He's been doing it all his life, I guess, coming up with crap to point out regarding any little thing that comes before him. And so I want to do name a game, and Ara and I will tell you what the game's about. Unfortunately, we tried this on each other before the show started, and we're really, really bad at it.
And how come all your games had, like, girls in swimsuits or whatever?
Did I say they were swimsuits?
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. Completely naked.
You're the one who brought up the Korean developers.
I think that's way funnier.
Well, it is, but if it's a Korean developer, they're automatically a bunch of naked girls. It's a rule, right? You ever played that game Polygon Love?
No, but I heard about it.
Now, at a torrent near you, everybody, go find Polygon Love. And it'll introduce
isn't
you to...
Is that Porygon Love?
It might be, but it's a couple of little teenagers... discovering themselves in many, many ways. And, yeah, there's all sorts of positions. Anyway, let's move on here. That's not what I tried to make the show all about. So anyway, I think we're going to try it next week, maybe. R and I, on our off time, will throw game titles at each other, and we'll try to get better at this so we don't humiliate ourselves on the radio if we try to do this next week. Do you think your friend's actually going to come on the air with us next week, by the way?
I don't know. Let's see if he's not a wuss and calls in... this week.
Yeah, Ara has all these friends who work in the game industry because he works at a game company. So there's all these people who could come in who would be interesting to talk to bitch about their previous companies because, of course, the company you're working with is always the best company on the planet. And so I'd love to hear their stories. But then they're like, yeah, I want to come in. I want to come see the show. That's pretty cool. You do a radio show? Awesome. Yeah. I'll be in the studio with you on Monday. And then they don't show up because, like, they got to eat dinner or something. It's totally lame.
I'm very disappointed myself.
All right, so we've had a good 5 minutes of distraction at this point. Here's what we're going to talk about today. First of all, I played Puyo Pop Fever, which is a game I got for the DS Lite not so long ago. My friend Jim and I were at the mall scoping for hot babes, as we do. You know, the nerd extraordinaire, myself, I go out to the mall and end up buying games instead. So anyway, I got Puyo Pop Fever, finally decided to play it, I think, last night, and I played it over... you know, wireless DS Lite connection with my friend. And now you had pointed out, Ara, that you don't like Puyo Pop Fever so much as Puyo Pop.
Or Puyo Puyo, that is.
Okay.
But same difference. Anyway. Yeah, it's like, it's really interesting because it's like, I mean, obviously the premise is the same. I mean, the basic mechanics between the two games are the same, but...
Let me stop you there, by the way. For anyone who doesn't know what Puyo Puyo is or Puyo Pop Fever... If you ever played Kirby's Avalanche or Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, same game.
Yeah.
And it's actually the original.
And now that we're going off on tangents, like, I don't even know why they decided to, like, make all those long names for these games because, yeah, I don't think it helped any of those sales numbers, guys.
Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, a lot of people remember that. And Kirby's Avalanche, good game. And actually, now that you think about it, I think Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo is also essentially the same game. It's a little bit different with the growing gems and stuff.
You don't want to get me started.
All right. So anyway, you said something about the Puyo Pop Fever versus Puyo Puyo, and it's that they add all this junk, like with the Fever mode. And Fever mode is basically like, let's say you're doing okay in the game. All of a sudden, you do well enough that you go into Fever mode. And then you can just annihilate the other character very, very easily, or the other player.
Yeah, basically, I mean, without getting too much into it, it seems like the main mechanics changes were done to kind of, like, make the outcomes of the games more random. I mean, it's more exciting because everything just seems a lot more unstable. But what ends up happening is that, like, you know, if we'll play against each other, like, let's say we played regular Puyo Puyo, right? Let's say we played, like, 20 games or something. You know, I'd consistently beat you more often. But in this new one, you know, I'd wager that it would be just kind of more all over the place.
It'd be even. Yeah, and I don't find a lot of excitement in random handicapping. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah. Well, here's the really interesting thing about that is that, like, you know, it's the trade-off between, you know, designing the game for kind of like the superficial player or the guy who only plays once versus, you know, someone who's actually interested in, you know, playing the game over a long period of time.
So is this the first Puyo game that actually came out in America with the title Puyo in it?
Yeah, I think so.
That's probably why they did this crap. Luckily, at least, I don't know if you realize this, you can play it in classic mode. So there's the option.
That's pretty cool.
And when you play multiplayer with only one cartridge and stuff, you can play in the classic mode. Yeah. You can turn it off. So that's great. It's great to have options. And the Fever mode is, I mean, it's visually interesting because stuff happens all over the screen. And, you know, everybody likes an easy game out of the blue. Oh, look, now it's super easy. I can beat up the other guy. But, like, I was totally railing on my buddy. And then all of a sudden he gets Fever mode. Oh, my entire screen fills with blocks.
Yeah, so that's... That's a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty lame game. And my point is that a lot of puzzle games these days seem to be doing that, like, because they need to add something new. Now, Bust-A-Move, I don't know how many people have played Bust-A-Move, but it's weird because it's so popular in terms of, like, versions. It's on every system. There's a million different iterations, but a lot of people still have never heard of it. But anyway, Bust-A-Move, the one with the bubbles and stuff, has gone from, like, Bust-A-Move to Super Bust-A-Move, Super Bust-A-Move 2 on Super Nintendo, and then you get, like, the 3 and the 4, and then you get Super, and then you get, like, Super 2000 and Ultra Bust-A-Move 3000 on the Xbox, and, like, all these different iterations. And you notice, like, the original one, all right, you got a couple, like, bubble characters, because it's a Taito game, and they shoot bubbles, and they drop down from the sky, and eventually, you know, someone ends. And that's it, right? Pretty straightforward, like Puyo Puyo was straightforward. Here are the game mechanics. Yeah. And then suddenly they add, like, ramps and angles and different types of balls, and then 20 different characters. Each character throws different balls on his opponent when he does well. We need sound bites of that. All right, so, I mean, different characters in puzzle games I think is ridiculous.
So do you find, like, all these changes, besides the characters things, I mean, do you find them that they're actually meaningful?
No, but I mean, that might be because I started on the simple version, and
right.
I was just like, why are they adding all this junk? And maybe if I came into it with all the junk, I'd appreciate it more. I don't know.
Maybe.
But, like, there was this a version, I think it was Super Bust-A-Move, or one of the ones before the most recent one, but on the next what were the next generation systems until recently?
Super Bust-A-Move 4?
I don't know if it was 4. Anyway, it might have been. But, like, it had these, like, seesaw-style ramps where, like, you throw some bubbles on one, and it's connected to a string to another ramp, and so it drops down while another one pulls up. And, like, and then there's walls with, like, conveyor belts on them and weird stuff. I might be making that up, but...
No, I think I did remember some conveyor belts somewhere.
Yeah, all these weird elements that just... It's not a puzzle game. Now it's, like, it's a fun action game but with bubbles and stuff. And so I realized when you said that about Puyo Pop Fever that actually that's a common theme across all sorts of puzzle games. And Tetris does it, too. I mean, yeah. I haven't even played the later versions of Tetris, but I'm sure they do.
Yeah, well, here's another funny thing. And this is not necessarily to say that, like, you know, it's horrible for game companies to do this because, I mean, you know, it's hard enough to come up with really, really awesome original ideas. But, you know, yeah, someone will come up with a game concept that is just really, really incredible. And, you know, the game companies want to get all the mileage they can out of it, right? So, you know, something like, okay, like Tetris or, you know, the Bust-A-Move games or, you know, Mr. Driller, which is an obscure example that probably nobody knows about. You know, all these games, they have several versions of them, right? And the, each one, like, the fundamental gameplay is essentially the same. They just make these incremental changes. And I think they do it because, you know, they want to sell the same game over and over. But, you know...
But the first one's always the best.
Well, yeah, well, they kind of feel pressure to, like, make something different to give you a reason to go out and buy it. You know, but, you know, interestingly enough, you know, all these extra things, these new things are just kind of, like... inconsequential.
I think you could make bigger stuff, like bigger worlds or some other dynamics in the game that don't completely destroy the underlying gameplay of the original, which is where they all seem to be going. Anyway, obviously that's music. We're going to be back, talk about some serious topics, some certainly more serious topics, as soon as we get back from the break. Stay tuned, everybody. We're back, the Chatterbox Easy Listening radio program, on your Monday evening here in local and sunny Phoenix, Arizona.
Hey, how come every time we come back, I feel this urge to burp?
I don't know, man.
That's really weird.
But why don't you let it out? I want your true feelings to come out and play with us, mingle. Show us what you're really made of, Aura.
Wow, you're really relaxed now, Alon. What happened?
I'm in the groove, and I liked how Andrew had that music queued up and ready to go. For easy listening. Ah. Hear the tunes. Go visit uat.edu.
Hey,
You can learn about the University of Advancing Technology, Ara. What were you going to say?
You know what we call this back east?
Sex Talk FM? I don't know.
No, we call it Smooth Jazz.
Smooth is K-Y-O-T. The Coyote. Nobody outside of Phoenix will get that at all. Am I even allowed to say call letters for other stations on the show?
I don't know
the rules. That's another station in Phoenix.
Nobody outside of me and, like, three of my friends would get that Smooth Jazz reference.
All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're here to talk about video games, as always. My name's Alon. This is Ara. We mentioned that last segment. All right.
This is me.
Now, we were talking about puzzle games and how the evolution of puzzle games is a little bit disturbing. Because you start off with a good concept, and it evolves into something which just sort of loses sight of the original.
You know what? I have to take back something I said, though.
Go for it.
I was grouping in Mr. Driller with all those other games, but the last Mr. Driller game, which was called Drill Land, you know, the highly creative title.
Was it Game Boy Advance or DS?
GameCube, actually. Only came out in Japan.
Really?
That was, like, a million times better than all the other Mr. Drillers, and it was essentially just, like, an incremental improvement, but there were just so many of them bundled into one that, that was a really, really awesome game.
See,
that one doesn't count.
I only ever played Mr. Driller on the Dreamcast, and I didn't quite understand it, because, like, my friend pointed out, oh, you can use the microphone and just yell drill into it, and it'll drill. I thought, all right, that's neat, I'm going to try it.
Yeah, that's
because it was alternative, but
I never did that. I think that was just like, oh, we have this peripheral we have to use. Let's try to think of something.
I think it came out at about the same time.
Yeah.
But like, there's no valid reason to have that happen. Like, drill, 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 drill.
No, I think that's a horrible way to play.
And you still
actually
have to use the D-pad to move left and right. Right. Anyway.
Yeah, you shouldn't use that.
Yeah. It's an interesting game, but I don't know. I haven't played any of the ones after the first one.
No, it's funny, though, because it's, like, it's really counterintuitive to a lot of people, even though the premise is really simple. I mean, you just want to, like, move downward as fast as possible. But I think that some of the mechanics of the game are kind of misleading to people because, like, there's lots of blocks, right? And the blocks, when you kind of, destroy other blocks to make the formations unstable, they kind of come and they fall on top of each other, and then when blocks match, they disappear. And this kind of, like, that kind of premise is used so much in other games, and it means something completely different than what it means in Mr. Driller. So I think it throws people off.
See, you know what's bad about radio? Is that what you just described means nothing to so many people who've never played that game before. I mean, I can picture it in my head because I've played it. But Mr. Driller is certainly a difficult game to describe, and I think that's part of the point you're making there, that it's a little bit foreign to what we've become used to.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, basically.
All right, so I was trying to segue into this other segment. For those who check out the internet news all the time, you'll see that there was an article written just recently on Game Daily Biz about how the game industry is broken, right? And this sort of ties in with the puzzle games, right? Because there's basically the evolution of gaming is destroying itself, right? You know how they talk about the world, science, and technology, and suddenly we're going to blow each other up, right? So, like, apparently the claim here is that technology, well, one of the claims anyway, is that technology is moving forward so fast that it's basically going to destroy the beauty of gaming, right?
Because that's a really good point, actually. That's a very astute observation, yeah. Whoever made it.
And it probably says who wrote this article somewhere. I don't see it immediately in front of me right now. It's Mark Friedler. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that.
Maybe
Beam
if
Daily's
he's listening,
CEO and publisher.
Maybe if he's listening, he should call in.
Perhaps, although I doubt he is. But anyway, so he makes the point, and the reasoning is that, like, all right, so we've always talked about how the cost to produce games is going up. And you know this firsthand because you work at a game studio and you can see there's tons of people there. It's not like a five-person job.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is that, like, I don't really believe that the cost necessarily is going up. It's just that the perception is that, you know, game developers have to make bigger and bigger and more expensive games in order to survive. This is kind of perpetuating itself.
Well, then the question that I come up with is, and many other people, why is it that making a more pretty game these days is so much more difficult? Like, I was just talking to my friend yesterday who has a lot of friends in the industry as well, and he's talking about how, like, working for the Xbox 360, there's all sorts of tools out there that make it super easy to develop for, like debug tools in it, which are beyond debug tools even developed for the PC these days.
Well, I can address that. I mean, there's a bunch of reasons. I can think of two of them right away. The first one is that as far as resource consumption goes, like, money or time or, you know, manpower or whatever, the kinds of things that we're putting in games right now are not only, you know, not the essence of the games, like cutscenes, for example. Cutscenes, how much gameplay do you get out of cutscenes? You don't get any gameplay out of cutscenes. Those are, like, pretty much, you know, generally speaking, the most expensive things to do in a game.
Yeah. And so if you're smart, you don't have a lot of them. Or you make a game with no story. Good game.
Right. Or, you know, if you feel like you have to make a blockbuster, you have to spend tons and tons of money on the cutscenes.
Well, that's why, I mean, also a lot of companies these days are going for the game-rendered cutscenes, which aren't nearly as expensive.
Right. The other thing that I think contributes to this is that there's a lot of pressure to cram more and more and more functionality into games. I think this will lead into, you know, what we talk about in the next segment. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, games like, I don't know, the Ratchet & Clank series or, like, you know, the GTA games.
But, like, that I can understand. That's evolution of gameplay. Right? Well, but then they talk about, like, oh, all these art assets. We have to have a million artists. Yeah.
Well,
but you know what?
I don't think it's evolution of gameplay. It's more like concatenation of gameplay because it's like, okay, we're just adding more things. You know, you're not doing anything categorically different. You're just putting more into it that you've done before in different ways.
So that's more reason to say that it wouldn't be terribly difficult to add, right?
Well, I mean, if, you know, just because something's been done before doesn't mean that there's, like, a nice and easy way to kind of just plug it in. I mean, a lot of times there's just lots of re-implementation going on over and over.
Well, I'm going to try to get back to square one here, what I'm trying to talk about. I feel like I'm swaying away from the point I want to make, which is, like, for instance, art assets are one of the big deals that people talk about.
Right.
This is what costs a ton of money. Like, you have teams of artists.
Okay.
But I know from firsthand experience that the trouble is not making something that's super detailed. Like, these days, every artist wants to, you know, sit at home for 10 hours and make his favorite little model and make it super detailed and nice.
Right.
And the problem is fitting it into the game world and making it not as nice as he originally made it. So it's not getting that detail in there isn't difficult these days. As soon as the programmer makes the engine that can handle, like, the lighting and all that stuff, they've got the model pumped out with all sorts of crazy detail. Getting it downscaled to what'll fit in the game is the part that, you know, that's where trade-off comes. But now we've got all this technology that can handle more and more of what they've been wanting to do.
Right.
So I think it's just that they're always wanting to do more than they can do. And
well,
they need to learn to start fitting in line with what the technology can handle.
I'd say that that's generally endemic of the industry.
Yeah, and I mean, that's always the case because you're always trying to push, do something newer and better, right? But still, like, that's one of the things. I don't understand why you need these huge teams of artists. Maybe because you've got bigger worlds, right? And that makes sense. You know,
we need
different types
simply,
of trees and rocks and whatever.
It's simply that the amount of content that we're putting in games in general these days is just way, way, especially the blockbuster type games, is just way, way more than we ever have. I think it's that simple.
I think a lot of it comes down to bureaucracy of these of giant studios. Because, I mean, I've seen all sorts of great things and large worlds come out of small teams before.
Well, certainly. I mean, that's definitely a contributing factor.
Yeah. There's so much other stuff I want to talk about. We're going to continue talking about this next segment. If anyone wants to discuss it, feel free. Phone number is 866-536-1100. We'll be here for another half an hour, so why not call in?
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Chatterbox Video Game Radio, coming out live, Phoenix, Arizona, KFNX Radio 1100 AM. News Talk Radio, 1100 AM. Or podcast through any one of a million different podcast services out there. Time shifted on your MP3 player or computer. We appreciate everyone who's listening, and feel free to visit chatterboxgameshow.com or chatterboxers.com. Same place. Those two websites. Yeah. So let's move on.
Hey, do you have a question for the day or something?
Well, I was going to ask at the top of the show if you think the industry's broken, but, like, we didn't even touch on the topic or discuss the fact that we were going to be talking about it, so I didn't. But if people want to call in, we had, you know, we're trying to urge them to call in at 866-536-1100 so they can talk about it. But, you know what, let's not move on. I want to talk more about this, what we were just discussing here,
okay,
about the broken video game industry. And this is, you know, if you want to pay attention to what this guy on Game Daily is writing about, and I wrote a couple things down, right? Some of the more interesting bits that he wrote. He broke it up into four parts, right? And made a point of talking about how the greater technology is basically squeezing out the gaming, because with more technology is coming greater expense. And with this greater expense is reducing risk, right? Because you have to sell more games, and so you have to reduce risk to make sure that you sell more games. You've got these bigger games that are less risky, and therefore, for a lot of us, less interesting, because it's more of the same, and that's, you know, why we're getting the sequelitis.
You know what else is really interesting about that? I don't know if you made this point or not, but, you know, if new technology keeps on coming out quickly enough, then nobody ever gets to work with the older technology for a long enough time to really kind of, like, develop a mature craft out of it.
Yeah, well, that's what happened for the first time ever, I think. With this past generation, that's what happened. Like, the PS2 is finally showing its prime with God of War, and there's a few other games out there. You know, Gran Turismo 4 did a wonderful job, and there's a bunch of games that are finally like, wow, these are amazing, but we're already moving our attention over to the new stuff, and so they're kind of dropping by the wayside. Like, I know God of War received a lot of acclaim, right? I have a feeling God of War 2 will receive much less, outside of the industry anyway. Partially because it's going to be more of the same of the first one. But on top of that, it's just like, well, you know, we've got a 360, we've got a PS3 to look at, and a Wii, so who's really going to be paying attention to the older games anymore? But, I mean, you're right about that. That's one of the things that is cool about gaming, is when you see them suddenly push the extra, they measure it in percentage power. Like, the machine, this game's using 80% of the PS2's power. I don't know how you measure that, but...
Yeah, they have some crazy tools to figure that out.
And somehow they're able to quantify... But yeah, it's interesting to see them finally push at the end of the life cycle, but now we're not even seeing the end of the life cycle anymore because we've moved beyond it. But there's this issue now that he's talking about in this article, is that the technology is basically killing the innovation, even though suddenly you have all this more technology to work with where you could innovate more. Theoretically, you're not, for, you know, other economic reasons. But something else that was really interesting, too, is he points out that, you know, there's always been a competition of eyeball time, right? You know, are they watching TV? Are they listening to the radio? Are they hanging out with friends? Are they playing video games, right? And we keep expanding our media attentions. And he made the point of saying, you know, MySpace last year had so many accounts on it, right? And this year it has 10 times as many accounts or something ridiculous like that. He said there's like 100 million people on MySpace.
I think half of those are bots.
I think, yeah, a lot of them are just recreations of some other famous person's website, so they get more hits.
Or you know what?
But what of the prawn? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So, like, the point is that there's so much more media out there. Like, I know I would be playing more video games if there were no internet. Like, I'll sit and just stare at my computer for a long time, And that's why it was great. Like, several years ago, I did a study abroad thing, and I went to Australia for a semester during school, and, like, I made a point of unplugging and getting away from the computer, even though I spent enough time in the computer lab emailing friends and whatever.
Blasphemer.
Like, I got off of it. It's like, okay, cool. Just sitting in front of the TV was like, wow, this is a party. I'm getting away from the monitor and whatever radiation signals are flowing into me, and I just felt better about life in general because I was doing something else, and I've sort of fallen back into that where I'm sitting on the internet all the time these days, and that's happening to a lot of people, and, you know, great for media companies, right, who survive off advertising on web pages and stuff, but now, you know, there's TV, there's radio, there's friends, there's sports, there's now there's MySpace, there's YouTube, there's everybody's little website and blog that you want to read, and we're spending less time doing the things that all of that media actually discusses, like you're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I hope you're busy playing a video game at the same time, because otherwise...
I was just about to say, Alon, you need to get out and play more video games.
Yeah. That, you know what? My calves hurt. I could barely walk today because I was playing Dance Dance Revolution on Saturday.
You have a cast?
What? My calves.
Oh, your calves.
Calves.
Okay, that makes
junkie.
Sense.
Junkie. No, I could barely walk. All today, like at work, I was like, thank goodness I sit down at work, right? Because walking around is painful for me right now.
Well, I can fix that for you if you want help with that.
No. Not interested in having any part of you touch any part of me, but thank you. So anyway, I played some games on Saturday. I got out, and I played some TDR. It's funny how getting out of the house involves playing games. Anyway, so there's this always been a struggle for attention, but now it's even worse than it's ever been. And so all these things are like fighting against the industry, the success of the industry. And I think the most interesting point is the technology killing itself, you know, and...
So do you think that this is getting worse, though? I mean, like, all right, MySpace is pretty big, but I mean, like, come on, does that really
make
a difference?
Dude, I don't know. I'm not a young whippersnapper anymore, but apparently it takes all sorts of time out of people's lives.
I mean, I don't know what people's problem is. I mean, like, all you guys who, well, mostly girls who put all that crap on your MySpace pages, I mean, like, come on, it's crashing computers everywhere.
It's because they don't have the skills to build a real website. It's MySpace.
I mean, like, you don't have to have 1,300 movies playing and, like, 4 sound files playing at the same time. And, like, I don't know. We don't have 3D things flying around yet, but, I mean.
Apparently you've been very busy on MySpace.
It's very bothersome. I mean, like, you know, come on. My computer's like 2 gigahertz or whatever.
All right.
You know, I don't want to be like, okay, I've said enough.
I agree. There are two points that when I were talking about the technology killing itself, killing gaming, right? Two points I wanted to ask you as the resident expert. Like, first of all, there's tools, many more tools that are supposed to be making it easier to develop. So why aren't they picking up the slack?
Right. Well, okay, you can...
I was going to say, the other one is all this procedural generation stuff. Now, this is sort of in its infancy when it comes to mainstream.
Yes.
But, you know, Will Wright was talking about it, and lately, I couldn't even find the game again, but I saw a post recently about some, like, full-featured first-person shooter game with network support and everything, and it was, like, 97K, and it was a beautiful game. And I remember playing a game last year, which was all procedural and fit, you know, on 100K or something, and it was amazing. You know, better than Quake... And you're fitting it on this tiny little nothing.
Well, all that, I mean, that procedural stuff is really cool. I mean, it's really interesting. You know, I think that it takes a lot of processing power to do stuff like that. So I think that it's only now that, you know, we've really gotten to the point where, like, okay, now, you know, these types of techniques are kind of, like, reasonable to do.
But if you make something procedurally and the technology gets better, that only helps the games, right? You could keep building stuff procedurally without going crazy with the art assets and everything. And as the technology gets better, well, they're just going to make your games better, and you don't have to worry about
the assets. Right. Well, I'm not really sure what the relationship is between, like, you know, how much it costs to do certain things. Like, obviously, you know, if you have a texture, you know, if you make it by hand, that's one thing. If you build an algorithm to define it procedurally, that's another thing. I don't know if it will exactly make everything cheaper or not, like you may be suggesting. That's definitely not my...
That's certainly what Will was talking about. Of course, Will's talking about basically the community developing the game after it's been released.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd love that. Sure he loves that.
Well, that's what he's talking about, right? How Sims, everybody creates content for the game so that the developers, it's no longer on their shoulders anymore. They create the tools, and then you end up having all this game out of what's actually developed for free.
Well, I mean, that's pretty cool too, but, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want, you know, if I want to see a movie, you know, I mean, I'd want to see a movie made by, you know, one guy, not some kind of, like, mishmash.
A professional?
Yeah, a professional.
Well, yeah, basically. No, certainly not all games can count on that. The game that he's making, Spore, right, and The Sims, that caters to it a lot more.
Sure.
All right, but what about tools? We've got all this middleware these days, all these physics applications, all these middleware tools that, like, Unreal Engine and stuff,
right,
make the graphics all pretty. So then you take a good graphics package, you take a good physics package, and then you take, like, one guy with a concept who can program, you slap it all together. Why does it take a team of 100 people?
Well, I think that these studios generally that have teams of, like, 100 people or hundreds of people, I think for the most part they tend to use their own technology and not really a lot of these out-of-the-box packages. And, I mean, to whatever extent you can integrate these kind of off-the-shelf packages, I mean, yeah, that obviously lessens the burden on your development cycle or whatever. But, I mean, I think that, like, the amount of work that needs to be done to make these games that people are trying to make, it's still, like, all these things you're explaining, like, okay, it reduces the burden, sure, but it's catching up, you know, it's going even faster in the other direction, you know? So it's like, these are just kind of like, yeah.
No, like, if your company is a large company and it builds this major tool set, but then new technology comes along, and then they spend 3 years building a new tool set, what's the point of ever building a tool set if you're never going to reuse it?
Well, you know, that's one of the technology problems too, right? I mean, new hardware keeps coming out. I mean, at one point, eventually, no matter how good your tools are, you have to...
rebuild.
Yeah, I mean...
the Frankenstein of gaming. We'll be back for our final segment, everybody. We got one caller we're going to take as soon as we get back from the break. You should call in, too, at 866-536-1100. Welcome back, everybody, to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, where we consistently remind you to go to uat.edu. That's the University of Advancing Technology, where you can learn about the game industry, getting into it, building games, building art, all that stuff. I did it. Or I didn't. But that's all right. I have a question out there. For those in our live chat, right, and you can go to chatterboxgameshow.com and join on the Chatterbox live chat.
You mean all those turkeys that are too scared to call in?
Yes, all of them. Who don't want to dial 866-536-1100. Nobody there knows me. They don't know me from, like, when I was a kid. And then my one friend, my buddy Jim, he starts going on to the live chat. And that's cool. I like him there. It's interesting to see a friendly face or name, right? And then he's saying, like, Alon, you know, there are developers at these companies that do nothing but write tools. Like, what do you think? I'm not aware of this? Do I not know that, like, that's people's jobs? Yeah, well, I'm a tool writer for this game.
I don't think we ever said at any point that this did not occur.
Of course, there are people who are busy writing tools. But this is part of my point, that they're busy writing tools that don't get used on anything except the direct sequel to that game. Like, you gave me a good example, actually. You said that when you worked at Acclaim, you used a tool set that was built for one game that worked really well on a totally different game that you were working on.
Yep.
Which is great to hear, especially out of Acclaim where you don't expect anything useful to come.
And I mean, it's not even a secret. You know, there was a very extensive and robust tool set that was developed for Vex.
Vex, an attempt at a good platform game, which did not turn out well.
And I believe that, you know, I believe that it was developed during the cycle of that game, and basically, you know, it was kind of like, you know, it continued to develop, and it was, by the time we started working on Red Star, it was pretty freaking awesome tool. So, yeah, you know, same tool basically made two games.
Yeah, except one of them never even came out, so there's a whole lot of use out of that. Although I guess we're hoping it's coming out these days.
There's still hope.
Cross your fingers.
They're eternally crossed.
Yeah, as you watch that, the systems that it's available for die out. you know, you can't even buy an Xbox anymore.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah. Anyway. So I'd like to see these tools getting used. Like the Unreal Engine, I would consider that a tool, right? And apparently it keeps getting used and updated, not annually, but like every several years they come out with a new version, and that's good. Then lots of people can use it. People and students still use Unreal Engine today.
Well, I believe that they're pretty much working on that continuously, actually.
Always updating it, coming up with the next version. But when they come out with it, you've got years of games based on it or using it coming out, and that's valuable. And, of course, they still make improvements over time on it, whatever version was made.
The Unreal tools are very, 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 very cool tool for designers.
And everybody learns that when they go to school, like a UAT, right, and starts building games, and they use Unreal Engine as, you know, basically their main modding tool. Anyway, I promised that we would get to a caller. Now, I don't know if you know this caller, Ara.
I don't know. Well, let's see who it is.
All right, we've got Larry on the line here. Larry, you are on the air. If you're on the phone, at least, you're on the air.
Larry.
And you get no more seconds. Goodbye, Larry. Okay. Well, that's as much success as we have with phones these days. And
what's
just when
problem?
We started the show, Andrew was telling me that we're moving into modern times and we have an extra line compared to last week. We have a whole new line.
Wow.
We could have one more person waiting on hold, not being spoken to. All right. If you do want to call, by the way, we've got a few more minutes. 866-536-1100. Tell me if you think the game industry is broken, where it's headed. Because I'm curious if I'm the only one. Like, I don't even know what I think. I'm just reading this article and commenting on it. I don't know how to feel about it. I've talked for a lot about having mixed feelings, right? Thinking that, oh, where is it going? All these sequels. But then Nintendo's making this change, and we all like what they're doing. If it turns out okay, and then I find out that it's not that great, and I whine about it. I bitch about Nintendo. And I don't know. I've got a very wait-and-see attitude. Because as I've been saying for the past year and a half, like, no matter what comes out, in general, like when we get hundreds of games, really, I'm only ever playing a few games, and there's always going to be a few good games to play. And speaking of a few good games, let's see if we've got a single good caller able to answer the phone. Larry?
Hello?
Larry, you're there. You were. On the air.
Oh, what happened?
I think he's playing with us on purpose. All right, no more Larry. If Larry calls back, I don't want to talk to him. I'm not interested.
I'm very disappointed once again.
I'm not interested. All right. So now we had this other topic. Ara came in. He said, listen, Alon, I've taken notes. I've studied about this stuff.
I've forgotten them.
I want to talk about something, and we don't have time today to get into it, so we're going to go into it next week, but we're going to preface you all for next week. This is a little bit about your intention here.
All right.
All right, so what is it that we were going to talk about that we didn't get to today?
Yeah, so here's something that's really interesting. This has been going on for a while now, actually, the past couple of years. All right, there's certain types of games. They like to call them, like, sandbox-type games or free-roaming-type games.
A la GT3.
GT3, like, I mean, even you know, I don't know, the last, you know, Jak and Daxter, or the last couple of them. You know, Need for Speed Underground 2. I mean, a lot of games these days, they have this structure where it's basically like, okay, you know, you can go anywhere and do whatever you want. And this is presumed to be something that's just categorically good or better than, for example, what the classic style of a game might be, which is, you know, you're basically heading down this one path. It's linear. You have to go through a sequence of things in a specific order, and that's the challenge of the game.
And I mean, we've discussed this off the air, that a linear game, I'm sure we talked about it on the air too, linear games obviously lean more towards storytelling because they constrict the world and they sort of force you along a certain path. And so they help if you're trying to tell a story and you have a totally free-roaming game, it's very difficult to do.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, invariably you have to linearize something in order to tell a story, right? I mean, it's not just...
Well, exactly.
It's not like random stuff happening all the time. I mean, you could do that, but it wouldn't really make much sense.
And so this is the sort of thing we'll be talking about next week. So, you know, get your thinking caps on. We'll give you a whole week to think about it. And then you can call in and discuss with us, you know, the merits, the good and the bad of your more linear style game, which inevitably is more story-based, versus...
Not necessarily, though. Although, it depends on how you define story.
Listen, if a game's going to be telling a story, you're going to have more of a linear line. I mean, GTA 3 still sort of tells a story. I mean, because there's common themes. It doesn't matter which missions you play, right? But there's always these junction points where, okay, at this point, the new part of the world opens, and at this point, you know, something else happens there. So there's some common.
Right. On the other hand, though, I mean, like, you know, take an old, really completely linear game like, I don't know, Contra, right? I mean, there's not really any, you know, narrative story per se, although it's a completely linear experience. Although, on the other hand, you could argue that, you know, even though the game is all gameplay and there's no story in the traditional terms, I mean, that is its own story.
There were still frame cutscenes between each level, weren't there? In Contra?
In Contra?
I thought there was like one picture. Maybe the arcade version did? Maybe I'm just thinking of the intro screen. I don't know.
Maybe, I think you're maybe just remembering like the part where, you know, they play that fanfare and your characters like walk off the screen.
Now, you know what I remember is the winners don't use drugs sign at the beginning of the game. That's what it is.
Yeah, those are very popular in arcade games.
All right, so that's what we're going to talk about. We want you guys to call in and participate in the show next week. Certainly you can email us, by the way, and we may take it upon ourselves to read those messages on the air. I've actually been getting more emails generally in the last month or so. A couple of things that I've paid attention to, and you've heard it. When I thought it was full of merit, I would read it on the air. And so feel free to send us something. My email's over there on the website. Might even get Ara his own email address one of these days.
Woohoo!
Be Ara at chatterboxgameshow.com. All right, so there were a couple of things in the news, actually, I saw today that I wanted to comment on, too. Where is this here? Did you see that Madden might actually run for, like, $70?
Wow.
For the 360?
I'd like to see, well, $69.99, I mean, that's not, I mean, they've done that before.
No, but for sports games traditionally have not been the expensive games out there.
Yeah.
And because you're paying for them every year. This is
I'd
like
to
the
see them
version,
try that
though.
And fall flat on their faces. I'd like to see them do something stupid, like an $80 game, and then just have that completely fail so that they stop going in that direction.
Well, the theme here is that, like, I think it's, you know, the usual game for the 360 is $60, right? And that's what they're able to pull off because Microsoft just decided to start charging more.
Yeah.
But then this is going to be the special version, which all like the extra videos and stuff, so it's $10 more. And so I can understand that. But like, I think it's really interesting that, okay, they get the NFL license thing, and suddenly, oh, it's not $30 anymore. Do you remember when it was like $20 for NFL, 2K, whatever?
Well, that was the non-EA games.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
but
they were
then that year, EA had to force it really cheap. They bought up their license, and now they can make twice as much on every game.
Ah, the joys of Monopoly.
That they sell. Yeah. Anyway, I hope nobody out there has a cracked DS Lite. If you do, write to joystick.com about it. Tell them, and maybe Nintendo will decide to fix it for you for free. Anyway, we're going to be back next week talking about the stuff we said we were going to talk about. And certainly, I want to hear more callers next week. 866-536-1100. Keep it in your brain and call us for next week's show. We will be back. Same bat time, same bat channel, everybody.
Bye,
good
guys.
Night.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.